This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays respect to elders past and present of the Kulin Nation. We recognise their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast. Oh yeah. Alternative news, analysis and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m.
Only double. Clap your hands.
Good morning, listeners. You're on the Monday Breakfast Show here at 3CR on 8:55 a.m. You're with me, Hannah, Edmure, and Izzy.
Hello.
Morning.
Good morning, my sweeties and listeners, sweetie listeners. Morning, how are everyone. We this morning?
Pretty chilly. Good.
Summer programming's over. We're back.
Mm-hmm. We are. We're back on.
We're back on and it's really early and we woke up in the dark again.
And it's cold.
And it's cold. We're back and we're so excited about it. How was your summers?
Busy. Yeah. So busy. But that's what summer's about.
Is it?
That's what they keep telling me. That's what they keep saying. Melbourne's supposed to be alive in the summer and then we chill out in the winter.
So true.
Yeah.
And then we try to escape in the winter.
That's it.
Yeah.
Because it's 6 months of cold.
6 months of sadness.
6 months of sadness.
But no, it's going to be a great year.
It's going to be a great year. It's 2026. I'm still writing the date wrong.
Same.
I keep writing 2025 because I'm just a bit shocked at this point. We're here.
We're here.
That's wild.
I know.
Anyone have any fun New Year's stories?
I went to this little festival, which was cute.
Oh, yeah, nice.
My partner's 1 year anniversary from our first kiss, so it was really cute.
Oh, my gosh, that is adorable. That is so cute. Bringing in the new year with love.
I know.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, and I got my license, finally.
Watch out.
The saga is over.
We are on the roads.
We are on the roads. Watch out.
Go karting. Yes. Welcome to the Billy Kart race.
Watch me on Smith Street.
That's it.
Yeah.
Toot, toot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just started bike riding. So exactly. I'm on the roads too. You better watch out. Helmet on and all, but it's kind of scary out there. Like a tram comes next to you and you're fearing for your life, but you know, it's okay.
It's okay, you got this. Riding in Melbourne can be scary.
But at least it's flat, you know?
Yeah.
You're rarely going up a hill.
Yeah, I can't handle a hill on a bike.
No, that's scariness.
Yeah. How was your summer, Ed?
Yeah, my summer's been good. I've just been around the suburbs, just doing my thing as per usual. I haven't actually left Melbourne. I think I went to Wilson's Prom in December for a couple of days and it was super hot, so we got really lucky.
That's nice.
But yeah, apart from that, just been kicking it.
Around the town?
Yeah, around there.
Yeah.
Kicking around the town?
Yeah, it's good.
We love that.
Yeah, to any of the listeners as well, this is my last show today actually, so I don't even know if Rob knows. Rob's away at the moment. This is where we've been at. The comms have been at. But yeah.
Rob is listening right now from Vietnam.
You better be listening.
Yeah.
If you're tuned in, Rob, love you, miss you. To all the fans, thank you. it's been a great, like, I think 9-10 months since April joining the show. Learned so much and networked so much in this beautiful 3CR ecosystem family and been able to tap into, so much that's going on in and around the world. So if anyone's listening and you're new to 3CR, definitely lean in because you'll come out the other side well-educated and informed on the truth.
Yeah, get involved. And it's been great to have you on the show, Ed.
Love you, Hannah.
You're amazing. That Virgo energy we needed.
Yes.
We will miss you so much. We'll shout you out every morning, though.
And you better
still be on the show. Yeah.
Keep it moving.
You can't leave. No, I'm kidding. Should we get into what's happening on the show today?
Yes, we should.
Yeah, let's do it.
So,
First up, we're going to be listening to a speech from the Invasion Day rally in Geelong by Cheryl Moody. Cheryl Moody is Australia's leading femicide and child death researcher, award-winning journalist, violence survivor and activist dedicated to ending all violence against women and children. She is also the founder and operator of the Red Heart Movement, the Australian Femicide Watch, and all associated projects. And then, secondly, we're going to be listening to some Vox Pops by Amy Chiara at the same rally in Geelong. And then, at 7:45, Violet Coco is going to be coming into the studio, and they're going to be telling us about the March in March for Forests. And do you want to talk about Tiny Sparks and Turning Points?
Up at 8 o'clock, we'll have our monthly segment from Tiny Sparks and Turning Points, a bulletin from the Common Social Change Library, and they'll be bringing us radical events over the years that have changed this country. This month's feature is looking at the month of February over our collective history, and a big thanks to our friends at the Common Social Change Library. And then after that, we'll finish with a speech from Sunday's Free Palestine rally by Sarah Barini. And Sarah Barini is a member on the board of the Islamic Council of Victoria and is an organizer with Hobson's Bay for Palestine. I think that's the plan. So let's get into it.
Let's get into it.
Let's go.
First up, let's do the headlines.
Yeah, let's do the headlines. Some folks know about it, some don't. Some know. Some will learn to shout it, some won't. Some won't. But sooner or later, baby, here's a ditty. Say you're gonna have to get right down to the real nitty-gritty. Let's get right down to the real nitty-gritty. Now one, two, nitty-gritty. Now yeah, boom, nitty-gritty. You're listening to 3CR on 855 AM, Apartheid Free Zone, and these are the headlines for Monday, the 2nd of February 2026. Gaza's Ministry of Health announced that 32 Palestinians, including children, were killed with dozens injured following continuous Israeli bombardment since dawn, local time, on Saturday. The Israeli army targeted police headquarters in the Sheikh Radwan neighborhood, killing 13 people and shelled areas, including the Moors, displaced persons camp in Khan Yunus. The bombings hit populated areas, civilian areas, and safe shelters for displaced persons. According to the local media reports, the targets were concentrated with the so-called yellow line, that is, areas which are outside the control of the Israeli army and which now include the largest population in the Gaza Strip. Since the beginning of the truce in October, over 500 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli forces. The UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights in Palestine, Francesca Albanese, said that what is happening in the Gaza Strip cannot be described as a humanitarian truce, stressing that, quote, there has never been a truce, end quote. In light of Israel's ongoing killings and bombings and the lack of the most basic necessities of life, and with regard to the Rafah crossing, Sunday has seen the limited opening of the Rafah crossing between southern Gaza and Egypt. Palestinian officials have said that at least 80,000 Palestinians are seeking passage to return to Gaza through Rafah. Meanwhile, 20,000 wounded and sick Palestinians in Gaza urgently need medical evacuation, since there is no functioning healthcare system for them out inside the strip. This is expected to commence in the coming days, however limited. Israel says that only 150 people will be allowed to exit through Rafah each day, meaning under these restrictions, it would take 3 years for the necessary amount of people to leave for medical treatment abroad. Of those 80,000 Palestinians wishing to return to their ancestral homelands, only 50 allowed to enter per day, they will also need Shin Bet approval and to traverse a multi-checkpoint Israeli system. These multiple checkpoints involve body searches, X-ray screening, and biometric verification, a security method that uses a person's unique physical characteristics to confirm their identity, such as fingerprints, facial recognition, iris scans, and more, before they are permitted to continue to pass the so-called yellow line. Those eligible to leave must register their names, which Egypt reviews and sends to Israel's Shin Bet for approval. They then enter a checkpoint run by the Palestinian Authority and EU representatives, while from a command center, Israeli officers using facial recognition software open a gate to allow them passage. Israel has also said yesterday that it will be terminating the work of Doctors Without Borders in Gaza, following increased bans on humanitarian organizations over the past several months.
Closer to home, the National Anti-Racism Framework was developed by the Australian Human Rights Commission as a whole-of-society roadmap to eliminate racism in Australia. The Albanese government funded the development of the framework and received it in November 2024. It contains 63 recommendations for action across the government, justice, health, education, media, and workplace to address racism in its all forms, with First Nations perspective central so to its development. Lydia Thorpe and Duai Warrigan, independent Victorian senator, put out a release on Friday following the bomb attack against the Invasion Day protest in Bullaroo, Perth, and has claimed the Albanese government has still not responded formally to the roadmap and calling on to immediately implement the recommendations of the National Anti-Racism Framework and expand the terms of reference of the recently announced Royal Commission so it can investigate all forms of racism and hate, not just anti-Semitic alone. Next week in Parliament, I will move a motion urging the entire Parliament to condemn Monday's attack and commit to real action to address racism and hate against First Nations people, Senator Thorpe stated. She also said that, quote, the attempted bombing of First Nations people on Invasion Day shows how urgent this is. No one is safe until we are all safe from racial hatred, end quote. And finally, the Victorian government has announced the redevelopment of another 7 public housing towers across inner Melbourne, all of which are older persons' high-rises and home to residents who are over 55 years old. Relocation of residents will begin in July this year. The estates affected are in Kensington, North Melbourne, Paran, St Kilda, and South Melbourne. There are 13 older persons' high-rises in total, and with this announcement affecting over half of them. The Housing for the Aged Action Group said on Thursday that the government must expand older persons' public housing and support older residents, and calls on the government to invest and grow public housing stock. There should be no reduction of public housing on the renewal sites as a result of the redevelopment. To retain and grow dedicated older persons' public housing and community housing, recognising the specific needs of older people. To fund independent and specialist relocation support to older residents to assist them to understand their rights and access support services as required.
to ensure the rights of residents are retained in any new tenancy, including rent setting, home modifications, bills, repairs and maintenance and complaints, and to prioritise maintaining older people's connection to family, community and essential health and care services. For more, stay tuned to 3CR breakfast programming through the week. You can catch Housing for the Aged every second and fourth Wednesday of the month at 5:30 p.m. with their program Raise the Roof right here at 3CR. These have been the news headlines for Monday the 2nd of February. You're listening to 3CR on 855 AM.
3CR Breakfast would like to thank the New International Bookshop, Melbourne's radical bookstore and venue, for their financial support of this program. You can find Nibs opposite reception in the Lygon Street wing of Trades Hall Carlton. You can buy books online and keep up to date with upcoming events at nibs.org.au.
Public transport's great.
What's not great is that unless you've got a radio with you, you can't listen to 3CR when you're on it.
Until now. The Community Radio Plus app lets you listen to us wherever you are.
Get on board and search Community Radio Plus wherever you get your apps.
VCR is about community, and we welcome your participation at the station.
3CR is open to a wide diversity of volunteers and is a great way to connect with Melbourne's activist community.
Have you ever thought about volunteering, doing a reception shift, getting a program on air,
training in radio skills, or contributing to one of the station's committees?
There are many ways to be involved at 3CR.
To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au and get in touch.
You're listening to 3CR on 855 AM, Monday Breakfast Show. We're going to kick off today's segments, starting off with a speech from the Invasion Day that happened in Geelang. Sherilee Moody is Australia's leading femicide and child death researcher, an award-winning journalist, a violent survivor and activist dedicated to ending all violence against women and children. Sherilee is also the founder and operator of the Red Heart Movement, the Australian Femicide Watch and all the associated projects, including the Australian Femicide and Child Death Map and the Memorial of Women and Children Lost to Violence. The memorial is designed to commemorate lives lost while providing a respectful and impactful forum highlighting the impact of violence on our community. It tracks every known Australian killed as a result of murder, manslaughter or neglect. This is an ongoing project with no start or end date. The intention is to continue documenting violent deaths from white settlement to current day. The memorial also holds the stories of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander women lost to violence, and in limited cases, some of the victims are names and their images used.
Okay, so we are down to Sherilee Moody. We have got Julie Spang, we've got Sebi, our last speakers for the day. Noor's going to close up for us. I'm sorry, I'm saying I don't want to do the ute again. Oh, you want to take over a little bit? Do you want to take over? Sherilee, would you like to come up here, please? This is Sherilee Moody! Sherilee has dedicated her life to ensuring that our women, their voices are heard. There's nothing wrong with being a staunch feminist, you all are anyway. This is what our world is. We are so blessed to see you, Sister Girl. Give them hell.
I don't want to be here. I like to be down with the people because I am the person who likes to be down and dirty. Hey, I want to thank the Wadawurrung people for having me here. My family is Gamilaroi, my maternal side. My nan was a proud black woman. She protected me from violence. She suffered violence throughout her marriage. The only time she found freedom was when he fucking died. She died 5 years later, but for 5 years, she had and peace and she had security. So thank you for having me here. I'm very honoured and very humbled to be on your land. Right, you might have noticed I'm menopausal. You probably tell from my fucking wrinkles. So I've got to write shit down, otherwise I'll forget it. I also swear a lot, no apologies, don't give a fuck. Today, I'm talking to you about how the media treat black women when they're killed. He killed our sister on a riverbank. She was sleeping. Journalists didn't tell you who she was. They didn't tell you anything about her life. What they did tell you was, she's a hand sanitizer murderer. They reduced a woman, a mum, an elder, an artist, down to three words, three racist words, hand sanitizer murder. And they based this on a leak from police. Someone in the NT police force told a journo at The Australian that she and her killer had been drinking hand sanitizer down by the river Living Rough. Can you fucking imagine that? Her name is Ms. Malta. She was the first Australian woman lost to violence last year. That year we lost 77 women and we've lost 5 already this year. Around 30 of those women were black. And every story that was written about them came with racist stereotypes. They could have humanized Ms. Malta. They could have gone down and spoke to her community, found out the person she was, like I did, a fucking phone call mate. They could have Googled her name because they knew her name, but they didn't. Had they have Googled her name, they would have known that she is a world-renowned artist. People paid many dollars for her work and she put the money back into her fucking community. Not much. 2 minutes work there. That's how they erased an incredible woman, a mum, an elder, and an artist. You all would have heard about the killing of the three Aboriginal people up in New South Wales this past week. A violent man who got police bail went and shot a mum-to-be. She was due to have her baby in March. Shot her friend, who she was sitting in the car with. Shot her aunt, shot another man. Thankfully, he survived. Right now, the media are running headlines framed around the paternity of her dead baby. She was barely dead 48 hours before those fucking headlines appeared, alongside the ubiquitous love triangle murder. Two women and a man wiped out, a baby killed, and this is where they went. This is what they do to Aboriginal women all the time. Back to Ms. Malta. She was killed in Darwin. Not long after she was killed, a white man was murdered up there. The same media that ran the hand sanitizer headlines immortalized him. They called for people to put a light on. They called for people to attend vigils. For weeks they ran stories about this guy. We knew every fucking thing about him, every fucking good thing. Not one negative headline, not one negative word. They couldn't do the same for Ms. Malta. Jane! This is no accident. It's dehumanization. It's erasure. It's victim blaming. It's pure racism. Last year, police charged a man over the cold case murder of an Aboriginal woman, also up in the Northern Territory. The NT News decided to run a story about her, and it did all right for about the first two paragraphs, and then it had to tell us that she'd appeared in court. What the fuck? I appeared in court once. Damaging a window. When I'm fucking dead, is that going to be your headline? The media don't tell you the strengths of the women, the passions, the lives they live, the things that are important, the things that make them unique. They just tell you these bigoted, racist stereotypes that feed their online audiences. I was a journalist for 28 years. I spent most of that time working in newsrooms across the country, including at the Herald Sun and the Courier Mail. I sat in an editorial meeting where two black women were described as sluts and cunts by one of the biggest editors in the country.
I've sat in editorial meetings where people with disability are called freaks. And if they happen to do something like, I don't know, win a medal, they're called gutsy freaks. This is normal. I've seen editors direct journalists to dig through court records to find information on dead black women. And when there is no clickbaity headline because we can't identify her for cultural reasons or we don't know her name or any of those other things, they reduce it to maybe two or three paragraphs and it runs for 2 seconds way down the bottom of the feed. I walked away from this industry about 18 months ago because I couldn't stand taking a paycheck from an industry that repeatedly demonised marginalised people, that repeatedly victim-blamed, slut-shamed and dehumanised survivors of violence and victims of violence. We all have to make a choice at some point in our lives, and that was my choice. In all my years in a newsroom, I never once saw an editor encourage or, you know, hold a journalist up to examine the life of a black woman, to go out to community and speak to her people, to find out who she is or what she does or why she's important. It literally doesn't happen. But a white middle-class woman is killed, they'll do everything. They will bend over to tell us everything. We only have to look at the case of Samantha Murphy. The reporting around her death was needed and vital, but that same reporting is never reflected when black women are killed. Basically, black women appear for a minute and then they disappear, doubly erased, once by their killer, then by the media. This is colonial violence playing out in full time, in real time, in our newsrooms. Racist reporting about murdered Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander women is deeply rooted in this country's foundations. Our deaths are silenced, our lives are devalued, our humanity is denied. When the media does report on us, they fall into those lovely stereotypes. They frame us as responsible for our own deaths. They strip away the context of colonization, poverty, racism, and intergenerational trauma. And that when the media don't care, this is vital, the police don't care, the politicians don't care, the Prime Minister doesn't care, the Premier doesn't care, the community doesn't care. And if you want to see evidence of this, all you have to look at is the Bondi Beach massacre. That is the biggest example of the media caring and it having a flow-on effect right across every part of our community. When these people don't care, when the leaders don't care, the police don't care, the media don't care, the community don't care, more women die. This is what Indigenous femicide looks like. We deserve better. We deserve reporting that centres our voices and our experts. We deserve reporting that names the role of racism, poverty, and of all of the other factors that play into the causes of femicide. We need reporting that tells the truth about violence in our country, and we need reporting that holds institutions accountable instead of protecting them and our killers. Our sisters are not demeaning clickbait headlines. Our sisters are not stereotypes. Our sisters are not footnotes. Our sisters are mothers. Our sisters are daughters. Our sisters are our sisters. They're our aunts, our grandmothers, our cousins, our neighbours, our friends, our colleagues. They're part of our community. They're our elders, they're our artists, they're our culture. They're our storytellers, they're our story keepers. They're all unique. They are loved, and most importantly, they matter. She matters. And that's it. Menopause, very hard to see.
You're listening to 3CR on 855 AM, Apartheid Free Zone. If you just tuned in, you're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show, our first show back for this year, and you were just listening to a speech from Sherilee Moody at Jilang Invasion Day. Sherilee Moody is Australia's leading femicide and child death researcher, an award-winning journalist, a violent survivor, and activist dedicated to ending all violence against women and children. And yeah, thank you for her very passionate words. Up next, we will be continuing with a collage of rally sounds from Invasion Day last Monday, also in Jilang, recorded by Amy from Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence, another 3CR show. So shout out to Amy. First up, there'll be speeches from Auntie Wendy Brabham and Kiri Tawai, introduced by Julie Saylor Briggs at the Jilang rally. We're also lucky enough to listen to some of the people on the ground that Amy spoke to in Geelong, starting with Uncle Fred Marks.
So I'm going to hand you over to Auntie Wendy Brabham, a Niri Niri Wamba Wamba woman, but an incredibly respected elder of our community here. Auntie Wendy comes to us as a former board member from Wathaurong, but with years and years of living and loving and laughing and playing netball, and she's real deadly. I'm going to give you to Auntie Wendy.
First of all, I want to acknowledge Wathaurong country. But most of all, I want to acknowledge Julie Saylor. Sarah. And all the beautiful allies that have worked with us over the years. It's amazing just listening to your voices today. Not that I've got a voice, but it only takes a village to shift and change society. The village is us. We know what the problem is. We hear the stories, and I'm tired of our young ones hearing the stories. I want them to live equally on this land, whether it's Wathaurong, whether it's Bunurong, whether it's Gunditjmara, Niri Niri country. I just want the racism to stop. Stop the colonization. Stop the greed for our land and minerals. And just let us get on with sharing our culture with our young and reviving our languages. Our culture has survived, and I don't know how it survived. You know, I don't know, but I do know one thing. It's the spirit. It's the land that we're connected, and you can't take us away from that. Can we? Hey, Dawn. Because you are the land and you are the spirit. And any children should not have to fix this problem up anymore. It's been far too long. Yes, we are getting a treaty. Understand the fears of the treaty. You know, we are getting over not getting the voice, but we will change that constitution and we will be recognised as First Nations peoples, because you will help us as allies and the land will help us. Anyway, I want to thank you all for being a part of this. I want to thank all the speakers for sharing your soul and your spirit and your life. Thank you very much for coming today.
Sarah, we just have a couple of people to thank. Thank you, Auntie Wendy. I've been on this little journey for a while. There's no assumption because I'm Torres Strait, grown up in Aboriginal community, that I know more. I don't know more. There's no assumption that I know less. I know less. but we have to decolonize. For all of us to be part of the future of Australia, we have to actually bury and let the past rest. And that is by breaking down the colonial constructs, y'all. The constructs prevented real education, real truth. You know, that's what's stopping this. Thank you, Auntie, for reminding us. Hopefully, one day our babies will grow up and won't have to do this. Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Sakaya. My name is Kitty. I'm a Wadjuk Noongar, Ngaapuwi and Ngati Tufatutoa woman. I was born just 2 years before the Adoption Act in Western Australia was amended to state that Aboriginal children should be adopted within Aboriginal families. That law came too late for me. It was an acknowledgement written into policy that removing our children from our people causes deep and lasting harm. That culture, kinship, language and identity are not optional extras, but essential to who we are. But even now, decades later, that promise is still broken. Because while the words changed, the attitude didn't. We still see Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children taken from their families at alarmingly high rates, still today. We still see intervention where support should be, and we still see trauma passed down, generation after generation, dressed up in protection. So when I speak about belonging, I speak from lived experience, from being born just outside the line where the law finally admitted what our people had always known, that children belong with their people. And that truth still matters today. Today is a day to remember, to mourn and to share the truth. A day that is still called Australia Day by a nation that has not yet come to terms with its own beginnings. I grew up in a nation that didn't know what to do with me. A nation that didn't see me. A nation that made me feel like I didn't belong anywhere. Not quite this, not quite that, and always asked to explain myself, to justify my existence, to soften my pain, just so it didn't make other people uncomfortable. Belonging was something I searched for before I even had the words for it. I grew up in the northwest of Australia, in a place called Karratha, a place shaped by red dirt and salt air, a rural town in WA. So I definitely learned that people will judge and hate me without even knowing me. I knew even from a young age that there were different rules for me. But you learn to find the safe places. Karratha was also a place of so much multiculturalism, where languages, food, stories and faiths crossed paths every day. There were places where difference wasn't something to fear. It was just a part of life. It was here I learned that culture doesn't weaken us, it strengthens us. The community is not about sameness, it's about relationships, about learning how to stand next to one another without erasing who we are. And that is why I'm here today, because there is no future that does not include truth. There is no healing without honesty, and there is no together if First Nations people are still being asked to carry this country's violence in silence.
Shame. Shame. Big truth, sister.
Invasion Day is not about division. It is about truth-telling. Yes. It is about saying we are still here. Our culture is still alive and our grief is real. And our sovereignty was never ceded.
Never ceded, girl.
It is also about imagining something better. The only way forward is together, not through denial, not through performative words, and not through asking us to move on before justice has been done, but through listening, accountability, and shared responsibility. Together means walking with First Nations people, not over us. Together means making space for grief while building a future planted in dignity and respect. And together means understanding that multicultural Australia and First Nations sovereignty are not in conflict. They are deeply connected. Because when the oldest living culture in the world is honoured, everyone benefits. Today I stand here not just in resistance, but in hope. Hope that this country can grow up and grow together. Hope that truth can finally be spoken without fear. Hope that the next generations won't have to question they belong. We belong. We always have. And this land remembers us even when the nation tried to forget. Why does changing the date matter? You cannot ask people to celebrate on the anniversary of their dispossession. You cannot build joy on top of grief and call it unity. As long as this day marks the breaking of our worlds, there will be an ache beneath the flags, a silence beneath the songs. Changing the date is not about forgetting, it is about remembering well. It is about choosing a moment when no one is asked to swallow their sorrow in order to belong.
Yeah.
I dream of a day that holds us all, where the oldest cultures on this continent are honoured in the light, not pushed into the shadows. A day of coming together that feels true in the body and steady in the heart, and honest in its telling. Only then can we rejoice together. So today, I'm asking something simple and something so powerful. Walk with intention. Not just today, but every day after this. Walk with a strong heart, one that can hold truth without turning away. A heart that understands that justice is not a moment, it's not a moment, it's a practice. That solidarity is not a word, it's a way of showing up. If you are not First Nations, walk beside us, not ahead, not in silence, and not only when it's comfortable. And if you are mob, keep walking. Our ancestors are with us, and our children are watching, and our culture is strong. Let this be more than a day of protest. Let this be more than a day of protest. Let it be a commitment to listen, to learn, to speak up and to act. Because the future of this place depends on how we walk together, with intention, with courage, with humility and with strong hearts. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here, and it was a fantastic turnout, and I just love the solidarity that we've got here.
Yeah.
All right.
Have you ever seen anything like this in Geelong before?
Not in Geelong, eh? I've seen them in Melbourne, I've seen them in other places,
yeah.
But this is awesome, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm proud that I more or less led the march, and you know, let everyone know that we shouldn't give up. We won't give up.
No.
For and grew up on the streets. I've been on the streets ever since.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. But I enjoyed today and. Thank you for all your support.
No worries. Thank you for your words.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Idris McChesney. I'm a proud Wadjuk Noongar man here.
And what's your role in the community here?
I'm a bit of a community leader. I love to be an advocate for queer black mob here in Geelong, as there's not really much of a space for us here, so I like to be a loud voice in that space.
That's awesome. And you're an artist, and I've seen that you've just done a bit of an exhibition showing?
Yeah, I just had an exhibition that raised $1,650 for gender-affirming care in the town.
That is incredible. How does Geelong respond to your work?
I feel like it's definitely positive. I feel like I'm bringing out more queer mob that have kind of been hidden in the shadows here in Geelong.
Yeah.
And it's been really nice to actually shine a light on them here.
What does Invasion Day mean to you?
Invasion Day to me means bringing together communities from all across Geelong and actually having a voice that matters here.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much.
To the Migaloo government, stop supporting the RDF, start researching and stopping deaths in custody for our black brothers and sisters and cousins, and stop being game and dogs.
Always was, always will be.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show here at 3CR. If the last two segments have caused you distress, First Nations listeners can call 13 Yarn at 139276. The 24-hour crisis support for First Nations people of this continent. Alternatively, folks can call Lifeline at 13 11 14. And now we're joined in the studio by a great friend of the show, Violet Coco. Good morning.
Oh, what a wonderful introduction. Thank you, Hannah.
Yes, you're here all the time and I love it so much.
I love coming in. At the moment, the studio is just looking gorgeous. There is decorations all around, shimmery glimmer and lots of First Nations colours and flags. It's just really powerful.
Yeah, I love a sparkly flag. Should we get into it?
You want to get into it?
The
nuts and bolts of the situation.
Let's do it. So you're here to talk about the March in March for Forests.
Yeah.
Do you want to first start by giving me some updates on the ongoing blockades against native forest logging in Litruwita, so-called Tasmania?
Yeah, so, well, at the moment there's a mass call to action in Litruwita. They're going to do a forest resistance tour. So it's around 100 people gathering, camping together and travelling out to defend the forests all around the southern island. And, it's going to be a really powerful experience. They are really making a push there to end native forest logging and they're sort of extending that call out across the whole continent, which has been really powerful, and that's what the March for March is about. But yeah, the Forest Resistance Tour is going to be just a really powerful experience where we show what that collective power can really do to stop that death machine.
What have you experienced in forests in Litruwita, but also across the continent, regarding ecological deforestation?
Yeah, good question. So I started being an activist as a city activist. Mm. It was a very different experience because it's already all destroyed here in the city. Like, you're not really defending anything. And then I started to do forest defence up near Lismore, Bundjalung country. And the forests there are very sick. They've already been logged and burnt so many times. And so, you know, they need so much protection and so much care because they're in that degraded state. And then I ended up going to Litruwita to do some forest defence. And I cannot even explain to you how beautiful the pristine ecosystems are there. It's just ancient trees as big as skyscrapers, you know, they're just, they're so stunning. And so, yeah, I think it's so important to engage in forest defence wherever you are, but seeing all these different types of ecosystems and the damage that we've done on the mainland and seeing these pristine ecosystems down south really kind of drives home what this ecological collapse is doing and what we've lost and what we have to save and recover on the North Island. So, yeah, hopefully that covers it.
Yeah, and since native forest logging is now banned in Victoria, with exception to, you know, maybe some...
They're still extracting. They're
yes,
actually
exactly, like
more logs than ever have actually been extracted off this continent and being sent to mills. And it's now under the guise of these fire breaks.
Yes.
Which anybody who listens to the scientists who actually study what happens with these fire breaks, it actually makes us, it like puts us in more danger because old forests don't burn as well as forests that have been cleared in the last 3 years. And so, yeah, they're doing it because people are scared. People are scared of climate breakdown. They're scared of fires. And classic politicians, they just want quick fixes to be able to say they're doing something so they can get elected.
Yeah.
They want to run fear campaigns without actually listening to the experts and knowing what is actually going to keep us safer and what is actually going to protect our forests, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, a lot of scientists have been talking about how these actually make the fires hotter and more intense because of the loss of old growth forests from this practice.
Yeah.
I was going to ask if there's like a difference between like fighting for forest protection in Victoria since this happened compared to down in Lutruwita.
Well, I think, you know, they've done a great job of convincing people that we don't need forest defence in Victoria with this like end of native forest logging declaration. And so that makes it sort of different in some ways. You know, in every forest, the story is different, but it's also sort of the same. Every tree is sacred in a climate emergency. And if you're pulling down trees, then you're putting our lives in danger.
Yeah.
And yeah, obviously, here people think that it's stopped, but it just hasn't. And so we need to be telling that story. Whereas, yeah, in Lutruwita, obviously, it's more of a classic situation of them, you know, but jobs, you know, there's not really actually that many jobs in the logging industry. And of course, we want a just transition. We want, you know, people to be supported, families to be supported. But a lot of these loggers have actually received payouts from Victoria to be retooled, and then they head to New South Wales or they head to Tasmania and continue logging there with the same machines and all this sort of stuff. So, yeah, there has to be a point at which they have to be accountable for their labour, and, yeah, we're really calling for that.
Yeah, and have there been any more, like, any impact from the ongoing blockades? Has there, is there any, you know, has, how's, like, the stopping the logging coops been going, and what's been like the hopefully positive impact of blockades in Lutruwita, if there are any?
Well, I think, you know, community resistance is always positive,
of
you know,
course,
the building the community up and more people knowing what's going on. I mean, I don't know if you saw the other day, the Bob Brown Foundation posted a video of a logger who, out of spite, I guess, videotaped himself cutting down this massive ancient tree and sent it into the Bob Brown Foundation to be like, nani, nani, nani.
Oh, my God.
And it's just horrific. It's absolutely horrific. But it also shows their mentality and, and how the tension there in the community is very childish in that regard, which is quite sad. But I think, I think that the hope that we have is in community resistance. I don't have much hope in the politics, unfortunately. I think that to stop logging and to stop the destruction of our natural world and essential ecosystems, we need to put our bodies in between the machines and the forests.
And how did you actually start getting involved with the Bob Brown Foundation?
Yeah, it was pretty funny. It was after I blocked the Harbour Bridge and I was facing prison, and Colette Harmson, who is a forest defender and a doctor in Lutruwita, called me up and she's like, oh, I'm actually facing prison too. You want to be friends? And I was like, yeah, cool. What are you facing prison for? She's like, defending the forest. I was like, no way. She'd actually broken three suspended sentences before they put her in prison. So, you know, she had to really be quite a naughty, naughty person. but you know, the forests to her are so important, and to hear her talk about them, it's very, very inspiring. And so, yeah, she did 3 months. And so when I got sentenced to 2 months here in Victoria, that was very inspiring for me to, like, remember, you know, Colette did 3 months, I could do 2 months, you know. So that's sort of how I became friends. And then she called me down there to have some yarns after I was out of all my legal blues. Mm. And that's when I got to do my first tree sit in the Styx Forest, which was just phenomenal. It's just an incredible experience to be sleeping up in the canopy and the birds flying in and out of your tent, which is like suspended up in the air. I'm terrified of heights, by the way. So, you know, when you climb the tree, you climb it at night. So I just had to like focus on the tree and just like pretend that I was a meter from the ground the whole way up. Yeah. And then once I was in the sit, I was like, oh, my legs didn't work. I was like, that's it. But I'm here now and they're going to have to remove me. So,
how long were you up there for?
I was up there so overnight and then about halfway into the day. And so they start the logging operations pretty early. They get into the coop around 4:35. Oh, wow. Yeah. And so probably... yeah, stopped about 5 hours, 6 hours of logging, which is pretty – I really want to, like, calculate how many actions the Bob Brown Foundation has done and how many trees that would have saved in that time, you know, because you're all like, oh, okay, you know, 5 hours of work suspended here, 5 hours there, but – like they're out there almost every single day. So if you miss the Forest Resistance Tour and you do want to go down and defend the forest or defend the forest anywhere really, you know, there's actions happening all the time to just slow down the machine.
Yeah. Do you want to tell us about the upcoming March in March for Forests?
Yeah, it is a National Day of Action. It's happening all around the country in a bunch of major cities. So check out the March for March website, which is marchformarch@bobbrown.org.au or something. If you Google March for March or use your other search engine, you'll find it. So it's all around the country, and basically it's a day of action all around to say, you know, we care about forests and we want to end the slaughter of our forests. And here in Nam, we'll be meeting at Parliament Gardens on the 22nd, and we'll be there for about an hour, and then we're going to march off to some fun locations. And there should be some surprise artists coming. Ooh. Yes, so stay tuned for those. I think it's so important. You know, there's a lot going on politically at the moment, and I just want to acknowledge, you know, how important and how powerful the front line on the streets has been lately. And, you know, we've all been out there slogging it out for Palestine and for First Nations rights. I think it's so important that we give that a day for the forest to, they can't speak for themselves. They don't get a voice unless we give them a voice. And so it's the day to turn up and say, you know, they matter. And it'll be very family friendly. So bring the kids.
Cute.
Yeah.
Are there any other ways that people who live in cities like Nam or other cities can get involved in fighting for forest protection?
Yeah, I think, you know, often the cities have the offices of the people who engage in forest destruction or government buildings. Here in Nam, we also have the DECA, Department of Energy, Environment and Climate in Action. And boo. just turning up and giving them grief and standing in their way and being, the squeaky wheel, shall we say. it all helps. So if you can't get out into the forest, because it is quite intensive to be out in the forest at times. So it's not really regenerative for a lot of bodies to be out there all the time, but there's definitely heaps of ways to get involved to defend the forest in the city, and that's about taking the decision, taking your body to the decision makers and just being a thorn in their side as much as possible. Also, if you're in Nam or in another city and you want to have a cor flute on your house for the march, or you want to help with postering or anything like that, we really want to paint the streets with these posters and get it everywhere.
And do you have any other call to actions for listeners?
Yeah, I do. You know, through something that unites the whole frontline movement is our need and right to protest. And on this Tuesday night at 5:30 at Parliament House. The Defend Dissent Coalition is had made a call out for us all to gather together and have some chats and listen to each other and hold strength for our right to protest. Because, as you know, there were some laws brought in last year that made it illegal to or criminalised lock-on devices. It criminalised all these masks in protest, and then they've proposed more laws to come in this year. And then also we had those federal hate speech laws, which are very concerning indeed. So I think it's a really important time for us to be showing our strength as an unity in our right to speak up against whatever it is we need to make progress on.
Yeah. Agreed. Do you want to remind listeners on when and where the March in March is?
Yes. So the March in March is on the 22nd of March, which is a Sunday, and it's leaving from Parliament Gardens in the city, and it starts at 11. So come early if you want to catch the climate choir. They often sing when we're setting up. And if you want to volunteer, we're going to need lots of marshals. We're taking on some pretty big roads. So, for safety of the community, if you're that kind of person, jump on to the March for March website and register to volunteer.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming onto the show this morning.
Thanks for having me. So wonderful to be here.
Yay. Anytime.
Public transport's great.
What's not great is that unless you've got a radio with you, you can't listen to 3CR when you're on it.
Until now. The Community Radio Plus app lets you listen to us wherever you are.
Get on board and search Community Radio Plus wherever you get your apps.
The Commons Social Change Library is an online collection of educational resources for those involved in community campaigns and social and labour movements. It collects, curates and distributes key lessons and resources from progressive movements from around Australia and across the globe. The library includes over 1,400 resources covering campaign strategy, community organising, activist history, digital campaigning, justice, equity, diversity and inclusion, and much, much more. It's free to access the library, so check out the collection at www.commonslibrary.org.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast. Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show here at 3CR on 855 AM on the dial. We were just speaking with Violet Coco about the March in March for Forests. A reminder for listeners, that's on the 22nd of March at 11 a.m. at Parliament Gardens on Albert Street in Melbourne CBD. Up next, we have our monthly segment, Tiny Sparks and Turning Points, a bulletin from our good friends at the Common Social Change Library. Today, they'll be bringing us some events from over the years that changed this country. This feature is looking at the month of February of our collective history and will come to listeners on the first Monday of every month at 8 a.m. For now, a big thank you for our friends at the Commons Social Change Library. You can find their work at commonslibrary.org and look for their page on the 3CR website, which will feature if you want to listen back.
Tiny Sparks and Turning Points is a monthly selection of protests, strikes and significant dates concerning social change in Australian history. This segment is presented by the Commons Social Change Library, a repository of more than 1,500 resources for campaigners, which can be found at commonslibrary.org. On the 1st of February 1851, the Australasian League for the Abolition of Transportation coalesced into a national organisation during a conference at Melbourne's Queen's Theatre. With branches in all the Australian colonies, its members vowed to campaign for an end to the use of unwaged convict labour. Following much campaigning and the election of its members to the Tasmanian legislature, the system of sending convicts from Britain to Australia was abolished on the country's east coast, with the last shipload arriving in 1853.
Also on the 1st of February, but in 2015, refugee supporters interrupted the Australian Open men's final in Melbourne, calling for the closure of the Manus Island Detention Centre.
On the 2nd of February 1894, Aboriginal people at South Australia's Punindi Station petitioned the government, demanding they be given land.
A citywide general strike in Brisbane peaked on February 2, 1912, in what became known as Black Friday. Following a general shutdown of industry, numerous demonstrations, raids on elite restaurants, and the regular picketing of shops and businesses that refused to recognise the call to stop work, 15,000 people defied a government ban on protests. Gathering in Market Square, they found themselves facing thousands of police, many hastily sworn in and some carrying rifles. Egged on by Police Commissioner Patrick Carl, police attacked and terrorised the crowd, for which they were widely condemned.
On the 3rd of February 1979, members of the West Australian Campaign to Save Native Forests occupied the site of a proposed smelter in Wagerup in order to prevent the destruction of old-growth forests through aluminium mining.
On the 4th of February 1840, shepherds in the York, 2J and Northern districts of Western Australia held the first meeting of the recently formed Mutual Protection Society. Possibly the first type of union in the area, this organisation aimed, in their words, to discuss and counter, quote, the dangerous powers conferred on magistrates by a late act of the Legislative Council respecting contracts between masters and servants.
On the 4th of February 1939, up to 200 Yorta Yorta community members walked off Kamaragunja Mission in southern New South Wales to protest poor rations, deplorable living conditions and dictatorial controls. A nine-month strike camp on the banks of the Murray River in Victoria ensued.
On February 4, 2011 in Melbourne, a crowd gathered outside the State Library to express solidarity with the hundreds of thousands of pro-democracy protesters gathered in Tahrir Square in Cairo. During the rally, a minute's silence was held to remember those who had recently been killed by the Mubarak regime.
On the 5th of February 1968, the Melbourne Draft Resisters Union was formed to fight military conscription.
On the 6th of February 1838, convict William Walton faced court in Sydney for sneaking extra food to his friends in jail.
On the 6th of February 1902, drinkers in the town of Malene in the Goldfields Esperance region, who had been boycotting local pubs for a month over exorbitant prices, received relief in the form of a barrel of beer sent by supporters in nearby Menzies.
On the 7th of February 1968, protesters chained themselves across the entry to the Swan Street Barracks in Melbourne to prevent the intake of military conscripts.
On the 7th of February 1972, Black power activists began a free breakfast service for First Nations children in Newtown, Sydney.
On the 8th of February 1829, inmates at the Cascades Female Factory, Tasmania's first all-women's prison, protested intolerable living conditions and harsh punishments by setting fires, banging on doors, shouting at guards, and resisting arrest. The trigger for their protest was the placing of two women in solitary confinement for receiving bread and cheese thrown over the prison wall by friends and supporters.
On the 10th of February, 1925, the South Australian Trades and Labour Council declared a boycott on IXL Jam in support of 500 women on strike at the company's factory.
On the 11th of February 1796, Scottish Republican and Democrat Thomas Muir, along with other convicts, escaped Botany Bay aboard the American ship the Otter. Muir was one among five Scottish martyrs sentenced to transportation to Australia for 14 years for sedition, which in this case included advocating for parliamentary and constitutional reform and distributing banned materials by Thomas Paine and others.
On the 11th of February 1917, work was shut on the remote East-West Railway in Western Australia over the poor quality of food.
Also on the 11th of February, but in 1920, Melbourne stevedores refused to load wheat, flour and other food for export until local prices were brought down.
On the 11th of February 1980, 20 Victorian unions brought transport to a halt over proposed cuts to workers' compensation.
On the 12th of February 1965, First Nations activists and supporters began a two-week freedom ride around New South Wales to protest against racial discrimination. As part of their journey, they carried out surveys of Aboriginal living conditions in rural towns and held protests against the exclusion of Aboriginal servicemen from the Walgett Return Services League and Aboriginal children from swimming pools in Kempsey and Moree.
On the 12th of February 1990, Greenpeace activists blocked pipes spewing toxic waste into the ocean from the BHP steelworks in Wollongong.
On the 13th of February 2015, 250 people gathered in New South Wales' Lurd State Forest to take part in actions against coal mining.
As part of an international weekend of action against the war on Iraq, hundreds of thousands of people from all walks of life packed the streets of Melbourne on the 14th of February 2003. In doing so, they joined tens of millions of others in more than 600 towns and cities around the world.
On February the 17th, 1846, Aboriginal people imprisoned on Flinders Island petitioned Queen Victoria, demanding they be treated with dignity.
On February the 17th, 1920, disabled ex-servicemen working in an artificial limb factory in Melbourne struck over the Defence Department's refusal to cut working hours and improve pay.
Having been given 6 months' notice by the Stonemason Society, many Sydney employers agreed to concede the 48-hour working week during February 1856. Master builders overseeing work on Tooth's Kent Brewery in Parramatta Road resisted, however, with the result that the majority of their stonemasons downed tools on the 18th of February, moving to another worksite where the 8-hour day was in place.
Also on the 18th of February, but in 1869 and in Fremantle, convict John Boyle O'Reilly escaped the penal colony of Western Australia. Sentenced to death in 1866 for joining the British military in order to sow dissent amongst the ranks, the Irish Republican sentence was commuted to 20 years penal servitude. Arriving in Fremantle in 1868, his exile lasted little more than a year. As with the aid of settlers, he escaped aboard the American whaler, the Gazelle.
On the 18th of February 1951, 330 female members of the Federated Iron Workers Association in Newcastle began a strike, eventually winning equal pay with men.
On February the 21st, 1972, a First Nations family were evicted from their Housing Commission home at Mully Mully. Following the eviction, six children were taken away by state welfare officials. In response, a community meeting immediately resolved to go on rent strike until the family were reunited and restored to their home.
On the 21st of February 1971, a 5-day national anti-war conference came to an end in Sydney. aimed at building on momentum against conscription and Australian military involvement in Vietnam, it drew 1,300 registered delegates.
On the 22nd of February 1907, 40 inmates at Fremantle Prison protested the use of flogging as a punishment by going on strike.
On the 24th of February 2013, 20,000 people marched in Fremantle against a proposed gas hub in the Kimberleys at Walmerton.
On the 25th of February 1980, 8 people were arrested for squatting a disused property in Chippendale, Sydney. This was one of 13 homes in a row on Cleveland Street where tenants had resisted heavy rent hikes and eviction.
On the 25th of February, but in 1982, members of the Sheltered Workshops Employees Association and other disabled workers rallied outside Parliament House in Canberra, demanding improved wages and the right to earn as much as other pensioners.
On the 26th of February 1986, a tree sit and other actions at Farmhouse Creek and the Lemontine saw the logging of old-growth forests temporarily halted.
On the 27th of February 1913, hundreds of employees at Sydney's North Shore Gas Company walked off the job. This was largely in response to long-running grievances over pay, but also asserted the right to strike, as the state government had gained an injunction that prevented the workers' union from holding a ballot over possible industrial action. The strike soon expanded, cutting off supplies to households and businesses and plunging parts of the city into darkness. A decision by the government to bring in strikebreakers, including students from elite private schools, saw workers disrupt hiring points, rally at Trades Hall, and hoot scabs at work.
On the 27th of February 1937, the owners of the North Woollahra mine near Port Macquarie in New South Wales gave in to striking workers' demands after miners occupied and barricaded the pit. On the same day, up to 250 women and children picketed the company manager's home.
On the 27th of February 1982, 13,000 Adelaide public servants took part in their first ever strike.
You've been listening to Tiny Sparks and Turning Points. The segment will return next month. In the meantime, to find out more about the history of social change in Australia, you can visit commonslibrary.org.
That was Tiny Sparks and Turning Points, the February events across history. You can find Commons Social Change Library at commonslibrary.org and look for their page on the 3CR website, which we will feature if you want to listen back.
Up next, I'm going to be listening back to a speech from yesterday's Free Palestine rally. We'll be hearing from Sarah Barani. Apologies if I got your surname incorrect. She is a member on the board of the Islamic Council of Victoria and is an organiser with Hobson's Bay for Palestine.
I would like to begin by acknowledging the rightful owners of the lands on which we are all gathering on today and paying my respects to elders past, present and emerging, as well as any elders that may be here with us today. This always was and always will be Aboriginal land. Always was, always will be.
Aboriginal land.
Always was, always will be.
Aboriginal land.
Just as Palestine always was and always will be Palestinian land. From the river to the sea.
Palestine will be free.
From the river to the sea.
Palestine will be free.
From the sea to the river.
Palestine will live forever.
Friends, I have never felt so sick to my stomach. Despite an ongoing genocide for over 77 years, despite ongoing illegal Israeli occupation of Palestine, despite us being a witness to an ongoing genocide for over 2 years, the Australian government has decided to do what? It has shamefully decided to roll out the red carpet for the president of a genocidal regime. Shame. It has decided to roll out the red carpet for somebody who celebrates the murder of the Palestinian people. Shame. it has decided to roll the red carpet for somebody who is actively responsible and participating in genocide. Shame. Is this what justice looks like? You tell me, is this what justice looks like? Is this what leadership looks like? The right thing for Anthony Albanese to do was to never have extended such a shameful invitation in the first place. Shame. The right thing for Anthony Albanese to do was to impose sanctions over 2 years ago. And instead of listening to the demands and calls of community for over 2 years, he has decided to cave to the demands of the Zionist lobby and the genocidal state of Israel. Shame. This morning, we woke up to the horrifying news of another 31 Palestinians being killed in Gaza. Since the ceasefire in Gaza, there have been attacks on Palestine and particularly on Gaza each and every single day. Shame. And Anthony Albanese thinks that he can convince us that it is acceptable that he is rolling out the red carpet for somebody who is participating and responsible for this genocide. Shame. Attacks almost every single day. There is no such thing as a ceasefire. There is no ceasefire in Gaza. Just as there is no ceasefire in Lebanon. While Palestine continues to be bombed and Palestinians continue to be killed, the Lebanese people continue to be bombed and killed at an accelerated rate as well, despite there being a so-called ceasefire in place. Since the beginning of the ceasefire, there have been over 10,000 ceasefire violations. In a matter of months, shame. Over 330 Lebanese people have been killed within those months since the beginning of the ceasefire. Shame. And over 448 Palestinians have been killed since the beginning of the ceasefire. Shame. We have seen Palestinians continue to be denied aid, which continues to be restricted. Palestinians are dying from malnourishment. They are being deprived of essential things, essential necessities like food and water and medication. And at the same time, Anthony Albanese is rolling out the red carpet to Isaac Herzog, the president of Israel. Shame. Louder, shame.
Shame!
This is not acceptable. This is not acceptable. This is a disgrace. A disgrace. It is disgraceful even more because we know that Anthony Albanese is completely aware of what the Israeli government is doing. He is aware that what is going on is a genocide. He cannot try and convince us otherwise. We need to remember that he used to stand at protests just like this and demand a free Palestine. He used to demand an end to the Israeli occupation. He used to demand an end to the atrocities being committed against the Palestinian people. And what has he done since being Prime Minister?
Nothing.
He has done nothing for Palestine. Shame.
Shame.
Now is not the time for us to give up. Now is the time for us to remember our power. Now is the time for us to remember our responsibility. They want us to lose hope. Never. They want us to think that they are winning. Friends, public opinion is on our side. We must believe that. Public opinion is on our side. No one can cover up the injustice that is being committed, as hard as they try. The atrocities that are unfolding are clear as day for everyone to see. Now is not the time to lose hope. Now is the time to remain steadfast. Now is the time to continue to demand justice. And as Tasneem was saying, when we say shut it down, it means shut it down. He will be here in Nam. Isaac Herzog will be here in Nam. We have a responsibility, knowing full well that he is going to be here, to shut Melbourne down. Are you going to be there to shut Melbourne down?
Yeah.
Are you going to tell all of your friends and family to join us?
Yeah.
We need to make sure that we are filling the streets of Melbourne. Each and every single corner of Nam must be full of people that are making this visit incredibly uncomfortable for him. Incredibly uncomfortable for him. We must not let our government roll out the red carpet for a genocidal regime, for a genocidal president. We must do the job that they refuse to do. And that job is holding them to account. We want to see you there. On Monday, the 9th of February, at 5:30, outside of Flinders Street Station, we need to see everyone there for the nationwide protest. It is incredibly important that we mark off his visit incredibly strong and united and consistent in our messaging that he is not welcome here. Do we welcome him here? And on the 12th of February, keep your eyes out on Free Palestine Melbourne and Free Palestine Coalition NAM social media pages. We will be announcing a snap action. Again, to make his visit incredibly uncomfortable when he's standing right here in NAM. We need to make it incredibly clear that we will not stay silent. Despite our government rolling out the red carpet, we are going to shut the door in his face. Palestine needs each and every single one of you. Please do not give up. Continue to be as resilient as the Palestinian people in Gaza and across the world. We must not give up. We must continue to speak truth to power. We must continue to shut down the streets until our government decides to do what is right. Let's make them regret ever extending this shameful invitation in the first place. Who's with us? Israel out of West Bank.
Israel out of Gaza.
Israel out of Palestine.
Israel out of Palestine.
Israel out of Lebanon.
Out, out, Israel out.
Out, out, Israel out.
The Black Lives Matter movement is not going away, here or overseas. It gives me hope, seeing the numbers of people that turn out to these Invasion Day demonstrations in Melbourne. It gives me the understanding that we will win, folks. We will succeed.
You're listening to Radical Radio on 3CR, 855 on your AM dial, 3CR Digital, and podcasting and streaming on 3cr.org.au.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show here at 3CR on 855 AM. That brings us to the end of our show. We were just listening to Sarah Barini's speech from yesterday's Free Palestine rally.
Before that, we had Tiny Sparks and Turning Points, our monthly segment from the Common Social Change Library, and thank you to them. And before that, we had Violet Coco live in the studio talking about all things forests, which, yeah, she's an angel.
And then lastly, we heard from the Palestine rally yesterday. My mic was away from me, pardon me. We were listening to Sarah Barinini from the Islamic Council of Victoria, organizer with Hobson's Bay for Palestine.
And at the start of the show, we had two segments from the Invasion Day in Geelong, so-called Geelong, and we had some vox pops from Amy from Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence. And thank you so much for listening to the show, and we'll see you all next week. Stay tuned for Women on the Line.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.